Welcome to Fund with Fundraising. I'm Deanna Lund, your host. I am a small business owner, author, and speaker. And in this podcast, I will be sharing interviews with interesting people. You will also hear my fundraising journey, so you guys can follow along while I hit my 2021 goal. I'll get back to you after today's episode. Let's jump right in. Hi, guys. Actually, today we are not going to jump right in. As you might have noticed, last week and this week, you didn't get a Tuesday episode. And last week, it was because I didn't feel well, so that kind of sucked, but I'm all better now. And this week, it's because I've decided to make a bit of a change to the podcast. So instead of coming out twice a week, where one is my goal episode and the other is this interview episode that you're gonna get in just a bit, I'm gonna give you everything in one. So from now on, every Thursday, you will get an episode where you get my weekly update and then you also get an interview. So I'm gonna start there. So one of the things that's been really big for me over the past 14 days have been that I decided to cancel the kickoff event. This I did because of Denmark is kind of in our second phase of the coronavirus thing, and things are shutting down and people are getting more anxious about everything. So I have decided to postpone it, and I don't know to when yet. I'm gonna see whatever happens, because by doing it now, I feel like I would jeopardize some of the participants' reputation. And I don't want to ruin anyone's reputation, and I don't want people to feel like I'm doing something that's irresponsible, especially considering that the money is going to people who are ill. So I have decided, after thinking about it quite a bit, that I have canceled for now, but we're going to do stuff anyway. So what I'm still doing right now is that I am still making bracelets and jewelry that I am selling. I'm still slowly getting started on that. And then I am having some ideas. You're going to hear one of the ideas that I'm toying with in this episode, actually, where Sherry talks about doing a Tupperware thing. So you can listen and hear what she's saying. So that I am looking into a little bit, if we could do that in a group I have that's in Danish. But that's what I'm doing right now. I'm trying to figure out how can I make some initiatives that can help me raise money now for the rest of the year. And I'm still kind of, I've been having a lot of focus on the whole event part, so I haven't been focusing a whole lot on what I started with having companies and people donate based on the number of steps I did. So I'm kind of thinking that I'm not sure if it's out totally, but I'm rethinking that, because to be honest, the whole thing about keeping track of that, it seems like something that is a lot of work compared to what it's going to give me. So I'm trying to think how I can do things better and maybe do some smaller events so that I am not having to be kind of on every day for a year, but something like doing the Tupperware thing and doing the event thing and doing kind of small things along the way, small fundraisers along the way that can help me raise some money. I'm still going for 100,000, but let's see how we get there. If you have any ideas, please feel free to write me. It would be amazing to get your ideas, and especially for things that can be cross borders. So fundraising ideas that can be done never or wherever people are in the world. So that's it for now. Now we're gonna jump right into today's episode. I hope you enjoyed. It was a pleasure talking to Sherry. So please enjoy the interview. In this episode, I am joined with Sherry Scott, and she has started her own charity. And I'm looking so much forward to hearing her story and why she did this, because it's really exciting. So, Sherry, thank you for wanting to be on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to share my story and what our mission is and things like that for everybody.
You know what? Then let's jump right in. Give me your story. Tell me why you decided to, well, first off, maybe tell us what your charity is and then why you decided to start it.
All right. So here goes. I have Angels and Dragonflies Children's Charity. And what we do is we provide necessities to families raising children due to, it started out as addiction, but it could be any circumstance. And from there, we continue to supply goods for all children. So our biggest mission is to provide furniture, because a lot of older people, like grandparents and families, are on fixed or limited income, and they can't afford to survive, let alone, you know, buy a crib or a high chair or a car seat, diapers and wipes, you know, as minimal as that is. Or we supply backpacks and toiletries to teens that are in foster care. So basic necessities sometimes are, you know, we take it for granted, but some people just don't have the funds to purchase them, as simple as a bottle of a shampoo or a baby bottle. So that's kind of where we started and where we are now. We have some goals for the future, but right now we're just kind of going with that, in that direction. And we're doing some minor fundraising right now. We're going into some bigger things, but that's kind of the beginning of what we are and where we're going.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. So you're saying that, you said grandparents, so is it only grandparents, or is it like just in general? You mentioned it earlier as well when you wrote me that it was about grandparents. So I'm kind of trying to figure out, is it then, for example, grandparents who are adopting or having their
grandchildren.
Thank you. Having their grandchildren in foster care, or how is it? Is it that specific, or is it more broad?
It started out that way because we got blessed with having to take care of our grandson when my stepdaughter was in rehab for drug addiction. So working a full-time job and taking over as a parent for 30 days while she was in treatment, we realized we didn't have a crib, we didn't have a car seat, we didn't have, you know, those things. So for us, it started out with, I reached out to the community and they had handed, you know, everybody reached out and helped us, you know, and we networked together and I said, well, it really shouldn't be this hard. So me being, you know, in my 50s, it has to be a whole lot harder for grandparents in their 60s, 70s, and 80s taking care of children. But with that being said, we reached out and we decided to reach out further and supply anything for any child that needs. So I said I wasn't going to just specify that it was going to be grandparents raising grandchildren, because it's a huge problem. But you know, I've helped more other people than I have grandparents raising grandchildren at this point. You know, just parents that got a surprise baby, someone that, you know, didn't expect to have a child, or just became financially in a hard time and they were expecting a baby, and, you know, whatever the circumstances is. So we help all children, all families, no specifics. We don't, you know, no judgment. So if you need help, you know, we're here to help you. Also, a lot of our families now, once they outgrow things, they hand them back to us. So we're taking gently used items right now. So whatever we hand out, say the child is, you know, 6 months old and they don't need a swing anymore, we get that swing back and then we can give it to another, you know, family that needs it. So that's where we are now. We're about a year old. So I've been incorporated last August. And, you know, we're a year in and now we're starting to fundraise and do some different things.
Wow. Okay. So where do you get things from? Like you said, you people start giving back, and that's really nice. But where would you get things from originally?
Families that outgrow things. You know, I work with few organizations locally that, you know, if somebody's willing to donate and they have children's things and that organization does not take furniture, does not take children's items, they'll call me or they'll refer over to me. So right now it's a referral system. It's people in the community. Everything's gently used, you know, from cribs to car seats to strollers to, you know, to toys. We take some clothing. If I know of people that are in need and they need some clothing, I will take that and hand it on, but I traditionally don't do clothing. But, you know, once we get a little bigger and we have more space, possibly, but right now I'm just limited on space. But community, I reach out to a couple groups on Facebook, like mothers groups and things like that. And I say, you know what, we have all these things, but we also need more things. And people are more than willing to give me their used stuff. So it helps.
That's really nice that people are willing to give. That's amazing. You said before that you don't really look at the background of people anymore. Like if there's someone in need, you help them. But is there some kind of, did you put up some kind of screening process to figure out if people are really in need? Or is it an honor system, or how does it work?
It's more like an honor system right now, just because we're so new and still trying to figure all these technicalities out. I do not require any documentation or anything like that. I just ask the people to sign that they took items. So I have tax records to show that things are coming in and things are going out. But other than that, I don't share any information unless, you know, they allow me to, or they do a feedback for me or something like that. But right now I have no screening process whatsoever. It's, you know, honor society. And if you really need a crib that badly, I'm not going to judge you. You know, it is what it is.
That makes sense. Is it only local, or is it more like, is it nationwide, or how do you work?
Right now it's locally, only because it's my husband and myself and a couple, you know, close friends. We do pick up and drop offs ourselves. You know, I'm doing it when I'm not working. I work a full-time job as well. So, you know, I do it before work, after work, I'm dropping off to the storage unit. My husband's picking up and dropping off. He drove over an hour the other day to deliver furniture to a woman that needed furniture. So, you know, as far as we can go, we're going, but it's tough, you know, when you do it yourself.
Yeah. Is that part of the long-term plan? Now, I don't know how long-term plan you're having, but is it part of the long-term plan to expand to other places? Or what is the thought on that?
Well, we hope to go nationwide. I would love to be worldwide. Statewide, I'm going now. We're in Monroe County, Pennsylvania. So countywide right now, I do go into Lehigh Valley. We do go into Northampton, and we go like the immediately surrounding areas. We go outside and into that other county if someone needs it, because we do work with other counties programs and some state representatives and things that we've worked with. But you know, physically, it's just really hard to go further than that right now. So once we get this branch solidified and generating its own funds and supporting itself, then hopefully we can go statewide. And then once we go statewide, we'll have a, you know, a good structure plan, and we can go outside of that and go nationwide, and it'll be a little easier for us. But right now it's, you know, trial and error.
Oh, but I love that, because that's the best way to evolve. And I like that you have a vision for what you want to do. I actually want to go a bit back to the beginning again, because you said that it started out with you guys taking your grandson in. How did it get from, how, maybe not how did it get from, but how long did it take for you to go from doing that to saying, okay, we really need to help other people in this situation as well, and then start the charity?
Oh, I'm trying to think, when did she went to rehab a few years ago, actually. We've been working on this probably 4 years. He's six now. He now lives with his other grandmother in Texas, which is, you know, a few states over from us. But how it started was she went to rehab. That was in like March 1 year. And we realized, you know, we shouldn't make it this hard, but then we had to take care of him. So we really didn't do anything until they left, and they've been gone. I think they're on their third year. So shortly after they moved out, we started this, you know, we started talking about it. We started talking to state representatives to see if there was a need for it, to see if anybody else provided the service that we provide, and also to see if this was something that was going to be a viable business. I mean, this is a nonprofit. We don't make any money, but it is a business. So you want it to be able to support itself. So I've owned multiple businesses, profit businesses. So, you know, I had the structure and the understanding how to run a business. But the problem is, you know, it's a nonprofit. So at the end of the year, I don't take any profit from it. It goes back into the business. You know, and a lot of people, and I didn't even know that until I started, you know, doing the research and the work and you know, the homework and the progress of it all. And it's very, you know, it's costly because you have to incorporate and then you have taxes and, you know, you have to file with the state and you have to file with the tax bureau and nonprofits. And there's just so many things that you have to find out before you can even collect funds from people or ask people for money. You have to be legally allowed to do that. You just can't say, hey, can you donate money? And I didn't know that either. You can get in big trouble for that. So, you know, just finding things out as we go. Hopefully I don't get arrested.
I hope not. That would be a shame.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm trying to do everything by the book. And it's just, you know, it's really hard to do it all yourself again, you know. But
when you say that running this as a viable business, is that including salary for you and your husband? Or is that just for, like you said, that you're not taking anything out to yourself, but I'm thinking that most people who start a charity would like that to be their full-time job, but then there needs to be some kind of income for you as well. So is that some kind of thought that you have in the plan?
Eventually, possibly, if we make enough money. My husband is going, like, this is my baby. I started it. I'm growing it. I'm getting it to the point where I can hand it off to my husband and he's going to run it. So, and that is going to be his full-time job, but he can't quit his regular job. He does construction. So he can't stop doing that until we can afford to pay a salary, you know, and then of course we're going to need an executive director and a, you know, and all those things. So eventually, yes, hopefully it's a viable business and, you know, he at least can get a salary, you know, and then eventually, I don't know if I'll ever take one, but, you know, at that point, I guess we'll decide it. But I think the money needs to go back into the community and what the purpose is more important than going in my pocket for a salary.
I think it's one of the things that are really hard about doing charity work and doing fundraising, because for me, I love doing fundraising and I do it for the MS Foundation, but I do it as a private person and I do put a lot of time and effort into it. So I either need to also have a full-time job or I need to figure out a way to earn some money in the process as well. And I think it's really a really, really hard balance to find. So kudos to you guys for having figured out some way of doing it.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we're empty nesters, so thank God for that. You know, our kids are grown and out. You know, my son has moved back with their, you know, babies trying to save to buy a house. So they're back with us, but, you know, they can take care of their own. So I have all this time outside of my job, you know, so that's where I dedicate all my extra time to the charity.
That's really cool. It's funny, I don't have kids or we don't have kids, and I don't know where you're getting all of that extra time from, but I'm guessing it's something about you've had kids or you have kids, but they're grown. So it's kind of the feeling of not having kids home anymore.
Yeah, and it's funny because I always feel like I'm supposed to be home to do something for somebody, you know, and it's starting to hit reality, starting to hit where I don't have to do that anymore. I have my own life. I have my own time.
I think it's amazing that you're then doing something that's helping others in this way. I think everyone who does something like this, starting their own charity or working a lot of hours for fundraising or for a charity, I think it's amazing. It's I really love people who do something selfless.
Well, thank you.
That's amazing. Okay, so you brushed on it a little bit, the process of starting this nonprofit. And, you know, I'm not in the States and I'm not starting a nonprofit. At one point, I may.
Not yet.
Not yet. No, but I'm kind of like you said, you looked into, and I, again, really great that you're doing the research on it, because I'm thinking if I should start some kind of charity, it would be around MS, but we have such an amazing society for MS in Denmark already. So why should I compete with that, right? So it wouldn't make sense. So, but I would love to hear about the process, because I think what I hear from, or what I read from the forums that I'm in on Facebook and stuff, it is that it's really, really hard. And in the States, and that's because most people I see writing are from the States, but it's a lengthy process and there needs to be a lot of things that you need to have, that needs to be like ready and everything to start a nonprofit. So could you walk me a little bit through the process? Maybe not into the teeny tiniest details, but kind of how is the process for starting, or how was it for you for starting the charity?
Well, I chose to not go with a lawyer because it's expensive, and I used to do paralegal. I have a little bit of input in that, so it helps a lot. So what I did is I started by incorporating the nonprofit. So you pay the fee, you file your incorporation paperwork, and then you get that back, and you have to file your 501c3, which is your tax deductible status. Then I found out after the fact that you have to file with the federal government, which is 501c3. Then you have to go state government and file tax deduction status from the state that you live in. So I'm at that period now, which is like 14 pages of documents that you have to fill out. Yeah. Then after that, I think there's a couple other smaller documents that you have to file as well, like solicitation forms and things, because you legally have to be able to solicit in the state that you live in. So to get funds and get people to donate. And then you have to file tax documentation and things like that. But it would probably have been easier and maybe cheaper to do it with a lawyer. He wanted, I think, $500 up front, which I didn't have at the time. So I chose to do it in little stages. So, which is why it pushed our fundraising out about a year before I started fundraising. That's basic where I'm at now. We're still in the process of assembling our board of directors and, you know, our committees and things like that. Like, I have people waiting for me to get, you know, set up, and you have to create bylaws and you have to create articles of incorporation and you have to file those. So there's all these different little ass things that kind of intermingle with each other. So you have to do them at the proper point, I guess, of filing, so you don't get in trouble. There is a book, and I don't know if I should plug it or not, but Nonprofit for Dummies has helped me. It's very, very simple. It's very, very detailed on what you need to do and how you need to do it. And if it wasn't for that book, I would have never have done what I've done so far. It's been a huge, huge help. I mean, there's others, you know, out there, and, you know, the Facebook groups have been a great help to me. Nonprofits, you just type in nonprofit and you can get all sorts of groups. And there's a couple that I joined, and they're very informative, and people are willing to help you and willing to, you know, to get you to where you need to go, which is really, really great, you know, that you have this support network on Facebook, you know, and it's easy enough to use. So that's kind of how I did it. I don't know if it's right. It worked for me.
That's the most important part, right?
You know, it works for me for right now. Eventually, yeah, we'll have enough money to pay a lawyer, and eventually we'll have enough money to pay people to do what we're doing, you know, and to double check it and make sure that I've done everything properly. But for right now, the most important thing to me right now was to get started and get out there and start helping people because people need stuff. And if I could do it in any way, that's why I did it. We tried to find a fiscal sponsor. And what that is an existing corporation, nonprofit that is already in business. And what they do is they just handle your money for you and they take a cut of that money. So they make a little money on your money, basically. So you could collect funds and fundraise and do all that. We chose to not do that. We chose to do it on our own. If I would have found really hunted for a fiscal sponsor, you know, that would have been another avenue, you know, which would have been a little bit easier on us, but there's nobody else like us. So it's kind of hard to network with somebody that doesn't do what you do. So that's about the gist of my process anyway. Hopefully it helps somebody.
I'm sure it will. I think it's important to know that it's not just easy peasy to do this. And like I've said in previous episodes as well, it's hard work. It should be fun as well, hence the title of the podcast, but it's also a lot of hard work. That's just how it is. I want to get into the fundraising part of it, but I do have a small question before I do that. You're saying all this about there's so many legal things that needs to be in place because before you're allowed to raise money. And then I'm thinking of all of these small sites like GoFundMe, and I don't know what they're called other than that, actually, mm-hmm. but where people set up these small events, kind of things where they raise money for individual people. Do you know if is that actually allowed then?
In order for me to put up a GoFundMe page for our charity, do Facebook fundraising, or Amazon Smile, before I can do anything of the sort, I had to file for the 501c3. Thank God it only took 2 weeks for me to get. Some people say it takes months to get the 501c3. I could not do anything without that. So, I mean, personally, if I wanted to raise funds, I could not do it for a charity unless the charity was registered 501c3. So personally, I tried to fundraise to put money into the charity money, but that didn't work. They shut me down. So because it wasn't a legally formed charity yet. So that's where I hit a brick wall.
Okay. But you can do it as a private person saying that, okay, I want to have a humongous birthday party this year, so I'm going to fundraise for that. You're allowed to do that on GoFundMe, for example.
Yes.
Okay. That's strange. Well, yeah. yeah. Okay, so you're not allowed to do anything as a charity without this one document.
Yes.
How many different documents do you need to file?
I think I'm up to 6 right now.
Okay, but then if they're 14 pages each, then that also becomes quite a lot of work.
Yeah, it took me a while. The 14-page document for the 501c3 was probably 23 pages, I think, by itself. A lot of it didn't pertain to me, so you can put NA in there. But then there was another one for Pennsylvania that I just got done. That one's 14 pages. And that one, it bounced back 4 times. I didn't do things properly. You have to have every single spot filled in, whether it pertains to you or not. It has to be a 0 or an NA. And then I had to have another document to back one of the answers up, and it's nonstop. So finally we got our last piece of information into them, and I'm waiting for a response. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay. So your advice to others would be very particular when you fill out these forms, because you can.
Exactly.
It's time consuming if you get it rejected over and over again.
Yes. Very time consuming. Be very meticulous. Be very precise on your answers. Make sure your answers are consistent because they check for that. You know, you want to have the same answer for the same question, no matter what form you fill out. So take lots of notes for yourself and, you know, just repetition over and over and over again.
Okay. So fundraising. Yay. How much did you guys fundraise until now? And what has your, and if you don't want to tell us that, that's also fine, but what have you been doing to fundraise from when you started till now?
I think I'm up to about $650 right now. And we're grateful for every penny we get, and we try and use it to the best of its ability. So what I've done, I started by just telling all my friends and family. So we've gotten checks from people that I've grown up with or that know me, or family that supports me and things like that. My parents and everybody that I know. So I've reached out to everybody I know. Some people gave us checks. Some people gave us stuff. Some people just spread the word, which helps so much more than money sometimes. So that started the process, you know, just trying to get a little bit of dribs and drabs of money here and there just to put in the bank and help us with business cards or, you know, marketing materials. And we have our first shirt with our logo on it for golf outings. When my husband goes to golf outings or I go to meet a client or something. So, you know, a t-shirt is huge. It's $30, but, you know, it takes a lot of money to do that stuff. The other things that we have done right now, we had a Tupperware fundraiser.
You need to explain that.
Okay.
How does that work?
I love Tupperware. So what I was thinking is, okay, strategically planning in my brain, I wanted to lay out our fundraisers according to what time of the year it is, because school's starting, holidays are coming. So I'm planning those things out. Tupperware fundraiser, what our Tupperware rep did for us, she was amazing. She did a fundraiser for us, and we got 15% of the proceeds went into our bank account. So if for somebody that did a Tupperware order, we get 15% of that. Plus, at the end, we get half price items. We got free items. So the free items are going to go into a tricky tray, which we are planning. The half price items, I personally paid, you know, the difference and bought things for the charity so we can put it as a fundraising gift or, you know, a silent auction, you know, prize or things like that. So the Tupperware fundraiser was great for us. We earned $111.11, I think, by the time we were done for a week and a half worth of work for us.
That's a really nice number.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad considering, you know, it's on Facebook and that's about it. Then we did a Pampered Chef. I mean, we didn't make as much with the Pampered Chef. It was like $40 waiting on the check, but it was fun. It gets people out there. It gets them involved. You buy something you like, you buy something you believe in, and we get 10%. If we would have made more sales, the percentage goes up with Pampered Chef. So we earned $400 in sales, so we get 10%. If we would have got $600 or more in sales, we would have gotten 15%. So because we're new, the traffic's not there yet. Next, we're doing a 31 bag. I don't know if you guys know what that is.
No idea.
They're like good quality. They have tote bags and lunch boxes and backpacks and things along those lines here in the States. And we get 15% of profit, or no, 20% of the profits goes to us from them, no matter what we earn. And so you buy a tote bag, we get 20% of that. Also, our rep is wonderful. She is putting a sponsorship program together. You can purchase a backpack filled with goodies for a child in need and pay her directly. It's $23.33, I think, something along those lines. You buy that and then it gets shipped directly to us. And then we hand it out to a child in need.
That's amazing.
So she's been networking for us. She's been adding people to our event and all that. So 31 bags, you know, Tiffany has been amazing to work with. Our next big event we're planning is in December. It's not quite there yet, but in the planning. But I think that's about it we're doing Norwex also. Organic cleaning products. That's coming up. So we have one a month. I'm doing one a month online. And then eventually once we're in COVID lockdown, kind of. So a lot of people don't want to get together. And we're trying to do all the online stuff we can do now. And then once we can, you know, go out and be social again, I'll start doing some community events. But for right now, it's about all we can do.
I think that sounds like a lot. And it's amazing that you're doing so much with... Well, when everyone is in lockdown as well, I think it's really great. So I'm curious on how do you get these collaborations? Because it seems like you're very good at finding these collaborations where you get X percent of the profit from it.
Most of the companies that do consulting, so Avon and Sensi and, you know, not to plug all these things, but, you know, all these different companies, they offer a fundraising program. So with the fundraising program, they offer you some perks. So you earn some money and you get, you know, a percentage, whether it be 5, 10, 20%. And from there, some of them give you free product or they give you half off as being a host. And we use that towards other fundraising events and try to sell it and make some money.
So that's something you would just go into their websites and figure out?
That, or I just reach out to some reps, you know, I'll find a product that I really, really like. Like I found out Norwex, which is a organic cleaning products. So it's reusable chamois and reusable floor cloths and all natural organic cleaning sprays and things like that. You know, I thought that was really a great product. So I reached out to the rep and I said, do you guys do fundraisers? And she goes, oh, absolutely. So just ask. That's what it comes down to.
That's a very good advice.
It doesn't hurt to ask, right?
Exactly. Okay. So I also want to hear a bit more about what you're doing like from now and ongoing. But I'm also curious about, before we talk about that, since you guys are new, what have you done other than you said you'd reached out to your own network, of course. But what have you done to spread the word around about you, to get sponsors and to get people to donate money and stuff, but also to people who need your help?
Well, we started with state representatives and they kind of guided us a little bit along the way of who to go to, who to talk to, what events to become. I do business card exchanges locally, Chamber of Commerce. I'm not a member of the chamber, but they throw 2 or 3 a year, I think, free events, or they're $10 or $15. You pay a fee where you do a business card swap. So you go there, you mix, you mingle, and you talk to people, tell them what you're doing, how you're doing it, and you know, find out what they're doing. So you kind of network with each other. Anything that's free is for me. So I'm very, very thrifty when it comes to trying to market myself because I don't like spending money if I don't have to. You know, so it's just a word of mouth community. Get out there and, you know, tell anybody you can. And when somebody believes in you, they tell everybody. So I think, what is it? They say one good word gets you one good result. But then one bad one gives you 3 bad results. So you want to get as much positive reinforcement as you can without getting any negative. So you would just want to make sure you do everything, you know, the way it should be done and portray yourself as positive and know what you're talking about before you do it. I think that has a lot to do with it.
That makes sense. You know what? I found that it can actually be really hard because then when you have to market yourself, like, for me, I know it's not quite the same because this is the podcast and this is my goal for fundraising. But then I have the Instagram page, right? And then the podcast, and then it's like, okay, so I don't want to be stepping on anyone's toes, but am I doing this? And can I get bad reviews? And can I get like all of these things about, okay, so it needs to be positive. It needs to be happy. It needs to be, I really don't want to get in the way of anyone. And I'm thinking that might be even more so when you have your own charity, because you don't want anyone bad mouthing you or talking about, oh, and then they just used all the money for something totally different, or like, and it doesn't even need to be true. But if you step on someone's toes, right, you get a rumor or you get something. So I'm thinking it can be quite hard.
I have an example. I'm not going to use names or charities or anything like that. Nope. I was on Facebook the other day and I'm looking at the pages and reading news feeds and things like that, because I like to put input where I can help people. And they started bashing this one charity. And I was like, I went on the charity site, I pulled up the site, I copied the link, I put the link there. I said, before you guys start running your mouth about nothing you know about, please do some homework. they were trying to say that the money doesn't go anywhere, or the CEO makes, you know, $1.5 million a year. Well, first of all, the CEO is responsible for not only, and I found this out, not only are you responsible for what you do, you're responsible for every single person that works or volunteers in your charity. That's a lot of responsibility. You should get $1 million a year if your charity is that big. And this one was. But I'm like, you know, they don't realize that you're ultimately responsible for every board member, every volunteer, every employee, every person that you donate to. You're responsible for all of that. You know, and insurance doesn't cover a lot of it. That's a big responsibility to get paid $50,000 a year in realistic view. So that $1 million, that person absolutely is worth that $1 million. You know, it's a lot of money to take from the charity, but...
I actually think that's an important discussion as well, because the thing is, that's a discussion that's up a lot in Denmark as well with some of the charities that the CEOs get a huge salary. And the thing is that, like you say, they have a really a lot of responsibility, but also it's kind of like, okay, so this CEO is a former minister of something, or this CEO is a former something, and they're known, so the value they bring to the charity is often that much higher than the salary they're getting. So one thing is the risk that they're having, but the other thing is, it's the same when you're saying like, oh, this TV station, like we have something in Denmark that goes at like a cancer show that's on TV every year, and they collect in an insane amount of money. And every year it's like, okay, they use this much money to produce this thing. It's like, yes, but it's like 14% of what came out of it. And the last 86% is still going. And that wouldn't have been there if they didn't use that 14% to put this out there. So some money has to go to administration. That's just how it is.
It's realistic. I mean, come on, look how much a hockey player gets or a baseball player gets, and they don't do much for anybody but themselves. Come on.
That became a whole rant. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so let's just talk a bit about what are your plans. So do you have any amazing plans for fundraising going forward?
We do. Today, I just got off the phone just before I started speaking to you with a girl that's going to handle our fundraising events. She's somebody that I had worked with in another professional aspect of things, so I know of her. Great, great girl. So needless to say, we are working on our first Tricky Tray event, which I'm not sure if you know what that is.
No idea.
You buy raffle tickets and... it's kind of like a silent auction. So you have items lined up and you have little buckets in front of the items, and you buy raffle tickets and you put your raffle ticket in the jar. So you're selling the raffle tickets and ultimately put it in for like a lottery. Then when the Tricky Tray is over, somebody pulls a raffle ticket out of the jar and says who's the winner of that product. So we're planning that, but I think we're going to try and plan it at a local winery with some drinks and hors d'oeuvres and things like that. So more of a social event as well. With the lockdown of COVID here in the States, it's, you know, it's really, really hard to get that community sense and networking. So I'm hoping we're going to do that in the middle of December. So for holiday, maybe, you know, a coupon off your ticket if you bring a toy for a needy child or something along those lines. But we're going to do the Tricky Tray event. So all the local businesses and everything have donated to us. We're going to put those up and raffle them off.
Okay. How much would a raffle ticket cost?
I guess that depends. Like, you have a ticket to the event, so that would cover your food, your drinks, and then maybe a little portion comes back to us. And that would cover the marketing and and all the expenses that come before that. And then after that, then you would buy the raffle tickets. So maybe $1 a ticket, or, you know, $5 for $3 kind of thing. So you get like a bonus if you buy bulk, or $10, something like that. But usually like $1 or $2 a ticket. And the more tickets you buy, it all depends on what kind of scheme of things she's going to be doing. And then from there, the ticket, the entry tickets where you really make the money, but the donations kind of, you know, go hand in hand. Or if we do a silent auction, what you do is you write your name down and how much you're willing to bid, and then somebody can outbid you. So then that person will put their name down and outbid you, and hopefully that would raise more money than the product is worth, but the money goes to charity, so it's a write-off.
All of the products would be something you get sponsored.
Yep, everybody would donate everything. Like, I'm already compiling things from local businesses for charity, plus like the Tupperware extras that I got. I ordered a bunch of things that go together so I can make like a collection, you know, a picnic basket or something like that. So that's one of our fundraising events. The other one, what we hope to do in the very, very near future is to have a restore.
Sorry, a what?
So it's like what we would do is take the used products that people donate to us and put them in a thrift store environment, sell them off, take the money and put it in our account, but then buy new for people that need it. So I can provide a new crib and a new crib sheet and things like that. So that's kind of the direction we're going. So then we would get more donations and sell them off.
Would that be so that, for example, you told me in the beginning of the conversation that people would come back with what you donated to them, they would come back with that, then you would sell that, and then the next person would get something new as well?
Yeah, that's what the goal would be, hopefully, to earn enough money to fund that.
That sounds like a cool idea as well, actually. This is so interesting, and I see that we're running out of time. So,
oh no!
Yeah, there's so many interesting ideas here, and my mind is kind of like just blowing with ideas. And like, how can I incorporate some of this in my own thing, and how can I do this in a good way? And I have way too much stuff already that I'm doing.
I know, doesn't that always happen?
Yeah, I should stop getting inspired. But Sherry, thank you so much. Is there anything you would like to plug? Let me know where we can get a hold of you if we would like to donate to you, or if we would like to get your input on something.
Well, our website is beautiful, an amazing website, just got built by a friend of ours. It's angelsanddragonfliescc.org. We also are on Facebook, we are on Instagram, we are on LinkedIn, we Amazon Smile. So if you shop on Amazon, you can do Amazon Smile for us. Right. Everywhere in the world. Google us. We pop up everywhere.
I will definitely link to all of these things in the show notes and on my website.
Good. And I will share. And, you know, hopefully if you, you know, keep going, maybe you'll become a nonprofit.
Maybe at some point. Not the plan right now. I have lots of plans of everything else, but not the plan right now. But Sherry, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. Not just me, hopefully, but a lot of people listening. So I'm so happy that I could get you on the podcast.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. And I hope if anybody had a thought of becoming a nonprofit, you know, just do it. Follow your heart and go for it. That's all I can say.
Great, thank you. That was a great interview with Sherry, and she had a lot of great ideas and points. I just want to say that I'm going to link for the books that she spoke about in the show notes, and if there's also these Facebook groups that she spoke about, and I said just go to Facebook and search for Nonprofit for Dummies, like she said, because there's a lot of different groups. I'm also in a couple of them, and there's a lot of inspiration to gather from those groups. And I want to kind of talk about two things that she brought up in the interview. One is to remember to fill out the forms correctly. If you are doing anything where you're having to fill out forms, it seems that you really have to be very, very specific with how you fill out these forms, remembering to write either O or NA whenever it's not applicable to you, if you're in the States at least. And I've spoken to others about this as well, that when you hand in documents and they're not filled out correctly, then you just get them back and you need to hand them in again, fill correctly. So at some point, it's like someone told me that they handed it in and then they just got the paper bag with everything they needed it to fill in, and it's almost like the government wrote it for them, so that's amazing. But otherwise it could also be that it's just a lot of extra work for you. So if you have the opportunity to check this out before you send in the papers and figure out if you've done it correctly, I would definitely do that to save yourself some time. Because as Sherry also said, that it's, there is a lot of work in this. Oh, wow. Okay. My Siri just went off. Sorry about that. That's what happens. But yeah, so remember to fill out these forms correctly, for sure. And the other thing that I think is a really interesting discussion is, and one, like I said in the interview, that I'm also trying to figure out a little bit, is how much money is how large a part of the donation is it okay that goes towards administration. I've spoken about this before in relation to my own fundraising and the whole thing about doing, having a job or having this being my job. And I think it's really interesting looking at the CEOs and the people in high positions. They get large salaries and people are really offended by that. But again, like also with some of the fundraisers I've been interviewing, I have no idea what their salaries are, but I really hope it's kind of high salaries, saying that if they can bring in multiple millions a year for a charity, then they deserve to have quite a bit of a salary, because if they weren't there, the charity probably wouldn't get that, because it's about networking and networking and networking. So they are the ones who are actually getting those large donations in. Like, I remember both Sam in the last episode and several more speaking about this, that they were starting off having people donating maybe $50 or $500, and then it's their work that's going to help the organization getting this to being a $5,000 donation or $1 million donation for that matter. And they do deserve to get credit for that, also monetary. So I am actually all for that people get paid a good amount of money. And a lot of the fundraisers, in my opinion, not my opinion, but what I experience, is that they are amazing people. So the salaries they get, I'm almost certain that most people then donate part of that as well, because they're great people. So they donate either to the charity they're working for or other charities that they have close to them, or both maybe. So I think it's a discussion that should be taken more, and should, well, not a discussion, but something that should be looked at more, and people should be it should be told that there's a reason why people get these huge salaries. So okay, that was just me up on up on my high horse here. That's it for today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now I'm hoping that you will go and really enjoy your week. In next week's episode, I will be talking to Alicia, and I am looking forward to sharing that interview with you. Have a great week. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Fund with Fundraising podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Lund. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can find me on Instagram at Fund with Fundraising, or you can email me at Deanna@smartbusinessplanning.com. Enjoy your week.